Hey guys, before we get started with this episode of Morbidology, I'd like to let you all know that my new book, Mysteries Uncovered, has been published by Dorling Kindersley and is available to buy everywhere. Mysteries Uncovered by Emily G. Thompson. The mysterious is all around us. So check it out if you're interested in UFO activity such as the Roswell incident, the Phoenix Lights, and the Rendlesham incident, alien abduction cases such as the Barney and Betty Hill case, uncanny events such as the missing crew of the Mary Celeste, the lost colony of Roanoke, and the fate of Amelia Hart. Also, notorious disappearances such as the case of Lord Lucan and D.B. Cooper. For every instance rationalized away, there is another that defies explanation. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join me weekly as I uncover some of the world's most heinous murders. Neptune City in New Jersey is a town of only 4,900 residents. In 2016, a local teenage girl vanished into thin air. Her abandoned car was discovered at the side of a bridge, prompting speculation that she had ended her own life. This speculation was further exacerbated when one of her close friends came forward to say that she had spoken about suicide in the past. However, it would soon be discovered that the girl had lifted a large amount of money from the bank. Everybody would soon learn that this case was not all what it seemed, and an investigation would reveal a fatal betrayal. Nineteen-year-old Sarah Stern was a graduate of Neptune High School in New Jersey, where she was a keen softball player and a member of the swim team. Sarah had started out in the varsity softball team as a freshman, but as a senior, her interest in sport began to taper off. Following her graduation, she attended Brookdale Community College for two semesters, where she studied art and TV production. Over summer of 2015, Sarah had worked as a beach badger checker at Cliff Avenue Beach. She lived with her father, Michael, and her grandmother, who had been residents of the New Jersey Shore Borough for over 60 years. Sarah's mother, Carla, who was Michael's wife, had passed away from cancer when Sarah was 16 years old. Sarah was known for her impeccable art. She was an aspiring artist, specializing in pencil portraits and watercoloring. Sarah and a number of other students would frequently take a trip to Nagel's in Ocean Grove, where they would help paint murals on windows during the festive period. In fact, Bruno's Pizza and Sub Shop, a local restaurant, had even reached out to Sarah and asked her to paint a winter-themed mural on their window. Her artwork had also been featured in the Monmouth Teen Art Festival and recognised at the Guild of Creative Art, while a sketch that she drew was used on the popular YouTube show In Human Condition. You're about to hear a clip from ABC, who spoke with Michael.
The school would go and do the windows for the holidays.
Wow, she was really good,
wasn't she?
Sarah, she...
Wow.
This is probably 2014, 15. I'm not sure exactly, but probably the last couple of years.
You weren't kidding. You could feel how much he loved being a dad to Sarah.
She just amazed me at some of the stuff she did.
Wow.
Sarah also had an interest in photography and digital media and was hoping that one day she would pursue a career in the field. She was often able to get the perfect shot in just one take. One of her cousins was a wedding photographer, and Sarah would frequently accompany her on shoots for practice. According to Michael, Sarah was well liked by everybody and had deep ties to her community. He said, "She just seems to get along with everyone. She's got a lot of friends." However, Sarah's friendships expanded far beyond the close-knit community where she was raised. She was a keen traveler and had visited Australia, Canada, and London for digital media conventions such as VidCon. While traveling, Sarah made friends easily and often stayed in contact over Skype. Her Twitter was filled with photographs of Sarah and the numerous people she met during her travels, as well as drawings of YouTube stars who inspired her the most. She was a massive part of a number of YouTube communities, and while she didn't know a lot of the people she interacted with in person, they all said that she radiated positivity and was one of the biggest encouragers. According to online friend Nikki Durrell, she had a way of bringing joy to any situation. She was incredibly kind and sweet to me, a person on the opposite side of the world that she never met in person. Her friend Maggie Wasax said that Sarah always encouraged her friends to be unapologetically themselves and recklessly optimistic. As a matter of fact, the quote, "practice reckless optimism," was a mantra that quite often appeared in Sarah's artwork. Over Thanksgiving of 2016, Sarah's family took a trip to Florida to visit other family members, while Sarah opted to stay behind. It was around 11:45 p.m. on the 2nd of December, 2016, when Sarah left her family's home driving her grandmother's 1994 Oldsmobile 88 Royal.
911, where is the emergency?
Not an emergency. Actually, on the Belmar Bridge, right after heading south in the middle of the bridge, there's a car that's abandoned. It's off to the side of the road.
The Belmar Bridge being the 35 bridge?
The 35 bridge would be going over going from north going south.
Into Belmar?
Into Belmar, yeah. Right.
And was there anybody inside the vehicle?
I looked, no.
Okay.
Unless they were sleeping. I couldn't see them by their head being up. Nobody looked like they were in it.
All right.
Around 3 hours later, an Uber driver called police to inform them of a parked car on the shoulder of the Route 35 bridge. When police responded to the call, they found the 1994 Oldsmobile 88 Royal. The keys were still in the ignition and the car was in working order, which indicated that it hadn't broken down. Police were able to trace the car back to Sarah's family, but they said that they hadn't been in contact with Sarah. Michael came home from Florida and a missing person report was filed. He went to the media to get Sarah's story out in the public eye. Michael asked that if anybody had been driving along the bridge between 12 a.m. and when Sarah's car was discovered at around 2:45 a.m. to please come forward if they had seen anything out of the ordinary on the bridge. It was a Friday night and the bridge likely would have been relatively busy. Meanwhile, friends and family shared Facebook posts about Sarah's disappearance in the hopes that they would reach far and wide and potentially reach somebody who had information that could be helpful in their search. Missing person posters described Sarah as being around 5 feet 6 inches tall and weighing around 130 pounds. She had a medium complexion, long dark brown hair that hangs past her shoulders, and hazel eyes. Michael said that he believed that she may have been wearing black Vans sneakers, blue or black jeans, and a red pullover hoodie. Since Sarah's car was discovered in working order and at the side of a bridge, there was a lot of speculation in the community that Sarah had jumped from the bridge. However, her family were adamant that this was not the case. Sarah had been happier than ever and had just recently returned on a high from a conference that was dedicated to her passion, YouTube and digital media. Several agencies, including the New Jersey State Police and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, were called in to assist in the search, as well as the U.S. Coast Guard, who started by searching Shark River. They had considered that maybe Sarah had jumped off the bridge, but the search in the waters underneath was unfruitful. In addition to Michael's public plea, Monmouth County Prosecutor Christopher Gramicioni said, "We are asking everyone to keep an eye out for this young woman and report any possible sightings as soon as possible." An anonymous tip line was also implemented for those who maybe knew something but were worried about coming forward, while Crime Stoppers said that they would be offering a $5,000 reward for anybody who provided information that could lead to the identification, arrest, and prosecution of any suspect or suspects in the disappearance of Sarah. The statement was the first time that it was suggested that foul play may have been involved. The first week of Sarah's disappearance came and went with no leads as to what had happened to her. On the 9th of December, her family had organized a search which would focus on coastal towns in Monmouth County, including the areas from Manasquan to Long Branch. Michael spoke with the media and said that Sarah's disappearance had been shared far and wide, and pretty much every single person in the surrounding area knew about her disappearance. He said, "It's not like Sarah at all, and we don't know. Everyone that talked to her in the days leading up to that, she seemed just fine. It's a mystery." The group of searchers was made up of family members, friends, law enforcement, and complete strangers. Michael thanked everybody for offering up their time to help search for his daughter. The searchers broke off into groups to cover more ground, with a low-flying New Jersey State Police helicopter hovering overhead. A group of women searching alongside Route 35 stopped to speak to the Star-Ledger newspaper. They had come to know Sarah during their frequent trips to the Cliff Avenue beach. Patty Radowski, one of the women, was an artist and writer from Bradley Beach, who often discussed art with Sarah. As she said, Sarah was a serious old soul. The search was unfruitful, and the next couple of weeks passed by in a haze for Sarah's family. Christmas in particular was a difficult time for the family because it was Sarah's favourite time of the year. Michael spoke with NJ Advance Media and said, "I feel lousy and heartbroken. They haven't come up with too many new leads. There are so many unanswered questions. We're at a loss, really." As the months trickled by, the case gradually went cold. Nevertheless, Michael and the rest of Sarah's family still clung on to the hope that Sarah would one day make a reappearance. However, in early February, their hopes were shattered when it was announced that Sarah was dead and that two of her former classmates had been charged with her murder. 19-year-olds Liam McAtasney and Preston Taylor were arrested, and it was revealed that they had murdered Sarah and then thrown her body into the Shark River in a bid to conceal their crime. The two teenagers appeared in a Monmouth County courtroom where it was alleged that Liam had gone to Sarah's home on the 2nd of December with a plan to rob her. Sarah had been home alone when Liam strangled her to death. According to the prosecution, Liam then called Preston and asked him to come over and help him dispose of her body and any evidence of the crime. Liam and Preston allegedly stuffed Sarah's body into her grandmother's car and drove to the bridge over Shark River. Here, they parked the car and threw her body over the side of the bridge. During their appearance in court, Liam was charged with murder, felony murder, conspiracy, hindering apprehension, and disturbing human remains, while Preston was charged with conspiracy, hindering apprehension, and disturbing human remains. They were both sent to Monmouth County Jail in Freehold to await their detention hearings. The arrests had been the first update on the case in a number of weeks, and the arrests had come as a shock, mainly because Sarah's body had still not been found, presumably because of the strong river and ocean currents. According to Monmouth County Prosecutor Christopher Gramicioni, his office had hoped that Sarah was still alive up until just a couple of days before the arrests, when according to him, tips had begun to solidify. He wouldn't elaborate on exactly what led investigators towards Liam and Preston, but said that several tips had come in over the past couple of weeks, which had helped them hone their investigation into a particular direction, which culminated with their arrests. News of the arrest sent shockwaves throughout the tight-knit community, even more so because Sarah had known both Liam and Preston from Neptune High School. Both Sarah and Liam were on the school swim team, while Preston was on the track and field team. Even more disturbing, Sarah had gone to prom with Preston and had made videos together with Liam. Furthermore, Sarah and Liam had both volunteered with the Bradley Beach Fire Company back in 2013. In fact, Liam and Preston had even assisted in the search for Sarah after she was reported missing.
She's pretty strong, so hopefully we're going to find something today.
Next, we will hear from Sarah's friend, Carly.
I think she saw someone she could trust and someone who genuinely wanted to be there for her and be her friend.
She definitely thought of them as really good friends and someone she could confide in and trust and talk to.
Liam and Preston had been friends since their freshman year of high school and had even shared an apartment together. Michael, in particular, was horrified by the arrests and couldn't reconcile the two men he saw in court as the two little boys he drove to school on occasions. Speaking to the media, he said, "When I heard this, nothing made sense anymore." Now that it was known what had happened to Sarah, the search focused on Shark River. Michael himself went out to the river to assist in the search for his daughter's body, while a state police helicopter buzzed overhead.
I was better with Sarah being missing, and maybe she had left without telling anybody, or, you know, she just wanted to get away. I didn't think that she was killed, just being murdered. It's just a horrible thing to hear. And then hearing and seeing the two boys that I knew. Sarah knew them. She was, she was friends with them. And, they'd been around. Preston took her to the junior prom in high school. And she's known Liam since grammar school.
As the grim search was underway, some more information regarding the case was made public. Prosecutors announced that Liam and Preston had been arrested after a friend went to police after becoming suspicious that they were somehow involved in Sarah's disappearance. After the friend came forward with his concerns, Preston was called in to speak with investigators. First of all, he denied any involvement, but then when he was brought in for questioning again, he made a full confession. He confessed that Liam had called him and asked him to help hide Sarah's body. First of all, they hid her in some bushes outside of her home before placing her body into the front seat of her grandmother's car. One of the men drove the car while the other drove their own car out to the bridge over Shark River. Here, they dumped her body over the side of the bridge. Prosecutors said that they wanted Preston to be denied bail because they feared that he may retaliate against the friend who went to police. It would additionally be revealed that Preston had led investigators to two buried safes, one of which contained cash which had been stolen from Sarah, which was buried at Sandy Hook, and the other of which contained Sarah's clothing, which was buried at Shark River Park. The safe, containing the money, contained thousands of dollars. According to Preston's lawyer, Preston should be released while awaiting trial. He argued that his client had attempted to talk Liam out of murdering Sarah, but according to Assistant Monmouth County Prosecutor Megan Doyle, investigators found no evidence of that. The judge rejected his arguments and denied release. It was additionally revealed that when Preston confessed to his role in the crime, he divulged that Liam had planned the attack on Sarah for at least 6 months. Prosecutor Doyle said that Preston was just as guilty as Liam because during a phone call on the night of the murder, Liam had called Preston and told him that he was about to execute his plan. He said,
"I'm at the bank. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to take her out."
After strangling Sarah, Liam called Preston once again and said,
"Dude, I did it."
During this conversation, Liam asked Preston to go to Sarah's house to hide her body as well as look for his cell phone, which he had left behind. Preston did just that. He drove over to Sarah's house, moved her body into some bushes that were in the backyard. Sarah remained here for 8 hours. Preston left Sarah's home without finding Liam's phone. Preston then called Liam at work at a local restaurant where he informed him that he could not find his phone. This led to the both of them going back to Sarah's home. This time, they robbed Sarah's house and moved her body into the car. The heartache of Sarah's murder reached far and wide. Sarah had been an active member on social media and YouTube, where she had connected with numerous people who shared her passion of digital arts. Sarah had been a massive fan of YouTubers Julian Solomita and Jenna Marbles, both of whom expressed an outpouring of support following the grim update. On the day that it was announced that Sarah was dead, Julian posted a tribute to Sarah, which he titled "Losing One of Our Own," which had been viewed almost 800,000 times. In mid-February, another hearing took place to decide whether Liam should be allowed to leave jail while awaiting trial. During this hearing, more information regarding the murder was revealed. The witness, who had gone to police about his suspicions, had secretly videotaped Liam talking about the murder and talking about his belief that Sarah had around $50,000 to $100,000.
And, dude, alright, so I'm hanging out with her. She has, we went to the bank, she took some money out, not all of her money. We're counting it out, and then she goes to walk out the front door. I choke her out, drag her. My biggest problem was the dog, and her dog laid there and watched as I killed her. Didn't do anything.
What kind of dog is that? It's like someone was in a big dog. It looks like a beagle, but it's like the size of a Great Dane. Jeez, nobody was there? No, nobody was there. Even her dad wasn't there. He was in Florida. Yeah, you said that he was there. Yeah, so I have to leave. I dropped my phone at Sarah's house. My phone was at Sarah's house, like.
Wait, you left your phone?
Yeah, I lost it. I couldn't find it. I had to go to work. I had timed everything out so that... Well, what did you, why did you take your phone? You should have left it in your pocket.
Dude.
What were you doing?
Strangling someone? I couldn't find it, dude. It ended up being out in the driveway.
Oh, it must have dropped out of your pocket.
It must have dropped when I was crawling to the, get in the car. But I choke her up, drag her into the back, put her in the bathroom. And then I had to go straight to work. So Preston came over, took the body, put it in the bushes. And then I was at work. I had a full, like, night of work. Except I left work a couple times, which looks sketchy. I look for my phone, though, which is a reasonable, like, thing to do.
Yeah, you gotta look for your phone.
Which is kind of, like, me losing my phone is kind of a good thing. Because the cops are like, oh, he's hanging out there. He lost their phone. His phone, he's... going back and forth between his house looking for it. And then I get off work that night. Preston and I go over to her house, take her safe, bring that over to my house before we do anything. And we take her body out of the bushes and drag it over to her back fence. And I crawl, get into her car, and drove off.
Put her in the trunk.
No, put her in the passenger seat of her own car. So I was driving, and I had her buckled in the passenger
seat. So she looks like she's just sleeping.
She's just sitting up. And my plan was for me, I underestimated my own strength and how much a dead body would weigh. Because...
It's lit weight?
Yeah. I got up on top of the bridge to throw her off. My plan was I was going to throw her off, run over, jump over the divider, and get into Preston's car. And I go up, open the door, unhook her, pull her out, start dragging her to throw her over, and then cars start coming up. I see, like, headlights coming. I try to get her over, and I can't, leg up. Like, the weight from her body, like, made me fall, and my leg, like, went up. So now I'm lifting my leg up, and there's three cars coming up. So I grab her body. Dude, I had superhuman strength, and I threw it in the car, and I picked it up, and her feet were up here, and her head was down there.
and three cars go by. And I'm losing my, because I easily could have been a cop.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, the police station is like right there.
Yeah, yeah. And then Preston comes over the bridge, goes around, makes a U-turn, comes up behind me. The two of us throw the body over, and then we're out. I pretty much hung her, like, I picked her up and had her just, like, dangling off the ground, and she just pissed herself, and
did you lose control of
said my name, and then that was it. And it took me a half an hour to kill her. I thought I was going to be able to choke her out and have her out in, like, a couple minutes. I choked her out, and then she was just laying there having a seizure or something. So then I got a shirt and I just shoved it down her throat so she wouldn't throw up or anything, and held my finger over her nose and set a timer. That's the only time I had my phone. And it took me like a half an hour after I hit start on the timer. I don't feel any different and I don't think about it. You always think you're going to try these new things and you're going to change.
But it didn't change.
It just doesn't do anything. It's weird.
Liam had divulged that he strangled Sarah with such force that he lifted her off the ground. He chillingly confessed to the friend that it took Sarah around 30 minutes to die and that he had watched the clock as the life drained out of her. Liam also said that his biggest problem was Sarah's dog, who just lay there and watched as he killed her. He described how he and Preston drove her body to the bridge and threw it over. The recording was damning and the judge denied release for Liam. Liam's attorney, Charles Moriarty, did not fight the prosecution's bid to keep Liam behind bars. However, after the hearing, he spoke with the media and said that Liam was innocent. He didn't hurt her and wouldn't hurt her, he said. Attorney Moriarty even suggested that the recording was scripted as opposed to a recollection of events. He said, "The videos are disturbing because both boys are talking about something that didn't happen. It's unusual, people talking like this, like they're talking about going to dinner." Just the following day, Preston's attorney, John Perrone, tried once again for him to be released from jail while awaiting trial. He challenged the reliability of Preston's confession because he wasn't sure under what circumstances Preston had provided the statements. During the hearing, it was revealed that Preston's confession to police matched Liam's confession to the friend. Superior Court Judge David Bowman refused the request and it was ordered that Preston remain behind bars. Shortly thereafter, the prosecutor's office released affidavits, which alleged that Liam had gone with Sarah to a bank where she had accessed a safety deposit box and lifted $7,000 before going back with her to her home where he subsequently strangled her. The documents didn't say if Sarah had gone willingly with Liam to the bank or whether he had forced her to the bank and forced her to retrieve the money. The documents also didn't explain why Sarah had so much money stored away, but they did reveal that Liam somehow knew that Sarah had recently come into possession of money. In March, it was announced that the prosecutors were ready to take the case in front of a grand jury. Their notification to the court was part of some new changes to the criminal justice system, which required prosecutors to work towards speedy trials for those held in jail. This new law required that cases go before a grand jury within 90 days of the suspect's incarceration. Towards the end of April, Preston appeared in court where he pleaded guilty to a number of charges, including robbery, conspiracy, disturbing or desecrating human remains, and hindering apprehension. He additionally agreed to testify against Liam in his upcoming trial. In return, prosecutors agreed to drop the felony murder charge that he faced. Preston took to the witness stand to provide chilling details of the murder case. He said that in August, Liam had hatched a plan to murder and rob Sarah after discovering that she had come into money from her grandmother. He described to the judge and attorneys that they had discussed the plan several times over the following months and claimed that he had initially tried to persuade Liam not to carry out the murder, before eventually giving in. Preston once again described how Liam had killed Sarah when he was not present, but confessed that he had assisted Liam in disposing of Sarah's body. He had hoped that with Sarah's car parked on the bridge, people would simply believe that she had ended her own life. On the witness stand, Assistant Monmouth County Prosecutor Christopher Decker led Preston into saying that he was involved in the planning of the murder, to a certain extent. Preston confessed that he told Liam to avoid killing Sarah during daylight hours. He also confessed that he received $3,000 of the money that had been stolen from Sarah. Preston would later take police on a walk through the crime scene.
When I entered...
When you entered, were the lights on in the house or were they off?
The lights back here were off, but the kitchen and the living room lights were on.
Okay.
And this door was closed. This one I couldn't get open, but I was able to push this one open, enter, and Sarah was slumped in this corner right here.
Okay. And again...
Behind this door.
Preston, you said, now there's these two bifold doors here. The door to the left was in what position?
It was closed.
Okay. And did you try to open it?
I tried to, was only able to get it about that far, and realized that she was behind the door.
Okay. And how about the right door? Were you able to open that fully?
Yes.
Okay. And where? How was Sarah's body positioned in this bathroom?
She was sitting like this, tucked into the corner and leaning over the toilet.
Okay. And her feet were where?
Sticking out into the room. Okay.
Position when you were taking her out?
She was been facing away and I had my arms under her shoulders like this.
Okay. So were her feet dragging on the ground?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I carried her over here, dragged her over here and kind of sat her under the bushes right here. I grabbed her legs and got her over to the fence.
Okay.
Liam dragged her over to the car and sat her in the passenger seat while I was putting the safe in my car.
Okay. And did you see him dragging her?
Yeah.
If somebody were driving down the road and looking into that car, what would they see?
They would have seen Liam driving a car and Sarah assuming that she was asleep in the passenger seat.
Okay, and you traveled to which bridge?
The 35 bridge to Belmar going southbound.
Prosecutors announced they'd be seeking a 20-year prison sentence for Preston, and based on New Jersey law, if he were handed a 20-year sentence, he would have to serve at least 17 years before becoming eligible for parole. Attorney Perrone, however, said that he would be fighting for a 10-year prison sentence. An interim sentencing date was scheduled for the 21st of July, but that could be pushed back due to the fact that Preston had not yet testified against Liam. Outside of court, Attorney Perrone compared Liam to Charles Manson and claimed that he had exerted control over Preston. He described how Preston had been raised by two very down-to-earth and wholesome people and had attended Catholic school and was religious before he met Liam. He said, "There was a change, and this change was Liam McAtasney." Following Preston's guilty plea, a grand jury handed up a 7-count indictment against Liam. It charged him with murder, felony murder, conspiracy to commit robbery, hindering the apprehension of himself, tampering with evidence, and disturbing or desecrating human remains. The grand jury panel additionally found an aggravating factor in the case, which increased the penalty for murder from between 30 years and life in prison to life in prison without parole. A life sentence in New Jersey equates to around 75 years in prison, and it requires that the convicted must serve almost 64 years before even being considered for parole. Following the grand jury, Liam's attorney, Moriarty, once again said that Liam was not involved in Sarah's murder and claimed that Preston was the guilty one and that he was trying to avoid a murder charge by placing the blame on Liam. Just the very next day, the Route 35 bridge over the Shark River was closed for what the prosecutor's office referred to as an active police investigation. It was immediately noticed by many locals that the area was the same area that Sarah's car had been discovered, leading to speculation that Sarah's body had been recovered. All four lanes were closed, while a New Jersey State Police Marine Bureau boat was seen in the water underneath the bridge. However, the same day, the bridge was reopened and Charles Webster, a spokesman for the Monmouth County Prosecutor's Office, released a statement which said that no further information could be released and there was no need for alarm. He neither confirmed or denied that the search was connected to Sarah, but it was evident that at least no body had been discovered. Swanson Health has been producing quality vitamins and supplements, foods, health, home, and self-care products for over 50 years from the heart of America. I'm lucky enough that they've sponsored this episode of Morbidology. Swanson Health are the only company to offer the full spectrum of wellness products for mind, body, and home. They have a massive range of quality vitamins and supplements, as well as cruelty-free beauty items, including makeup, shampoos, and face washes. They also have eco-friendly home products. In fact, they carry over 20,000 wellness products at a great value, and all of their brand vitamins and supplements are crafted in the USA and made with unsurpassed purity and potency. My personal favourites have got to be their CBD Full Spectrum Soft Gel Tablets, which deliver 15 milligrams of CBD, their multivitamins with iron, which deliver 16 essential vitamins and minerals in one tablet. I've also tried a variety of face washes and moisturizers that leave my skin feeling fresh. So if you'd like to try any of Swanson Health's great products for yourself, use the promo code MORBID20 for 20% off at swanson.com. Since you're listening to Morbidology, I don't doubt that you're a murder mystery fan. Well, today's episode is sponsored by the amazing mobile puzzle game, June's Journey. This is a free-to-download mobile game, and the objective is to find objects that are hidden within beautiful, colourful, and carefully crafted scenes. Even better, this game is set in the 1920s and has a real glamorous aesthetic and a diverse cast of characters. Each scene in the game will take you through a murder mystery, but along the way, you'll find yourself uncovering a number of secrets. What I really love about this game is that it's super therapeutic and even relaxing, but at the same time, it truly tests your observations and keeps your mind fresh. I especially like to play this game late at night before I go to bed. So go ahead and download June's Journey for free at the Apple App Store or Google Play, or click the link in my show notes. In mid-May, Liam pleaded not guilty to the murder of Sarah. Following the brief court hearing, attorney Moriarty said that Liam would not be taking a plea deal because he was innocent of the crime he was charged with. He subsequently filed two motions which delayed the case for 77 days. The first motion that he filed was to suppress the recorded conversation between Liam and the witness who recorded Liam openly speaking about carrying out the murder. The second motion he filed was to seek a change of venue for the trial. Attorney Moriarty suggested that Liam couldn't get a fair trial due to the publicity of the case, as well as comments on the internet. In regards to the comments on the internet, Attorney Moriarty said that they were pretty strong as to how the commenter felt about the case as a whole. On the 17th of July, around 1,000 people gathered to commemorate the life of Sarah. Speaking with ABC News, Michael said that Sarah would have wanted the memorial to be more of a celebration of her life than a somber event. He said, "Pretty awesome to see so many people come out for Sarah. They knew we were celebrating her life, and that was a good time." The memorial was held at the Neptune City Community Center, where Michael stood in a receiving line for 8 hours as the community paid their respects. The commemoration started with a Catholic priest who praised Michael's strength during this unimaginable time. A number of Sarah's teachers took to the stage and relived their fond memories of Sarah.
"She loved to learn and try new things, and she felt a great sense of pride and accomplishment in all of her work. One of my favorite things about Sarah was her obvious close connection with her mom and dad. They were a wonderful trio, and I nicknamed them inside my head, the Happy Laughing Family. They all seemed to possess the exact same sense of humor. And they truly got a kick out of most things that any one of them would say, always followed by lots of laughter and Sarah's beautiful smile.
Many spoke of her playful pranks, which always lifted spirits, and spoke about her unlimited potential, which now would never be fully realized. In a poem that Sarah's language art teacher wrote, she described Sarah as smart and artistic, loving and kind, and said that these qualities were Sarah's legacy. A number of Sarah's friends also made a speech. They tried to laugh through the tears as they recounted how Sarah counted down to the 11th of July each year, because on that date, 7-Eleven would give out free Slurpees. Members of Sarah's family also recollected fond memories they had of Sarah. Several of her cousins recalled the kindness that Sarah offered everybody. One cousin, Chris, described how Sarah had saved a Halloween card to give to him on his birthday in August because Halloween was his favourite holiday. It was just the little things that made Sarah who she was. The memorial ended with a candlelight vigil where hundreds of Sarah's friends and family lifted a flame in her memory. According to Michael, the day gave him the sense of closure that he desperately needed. Michael had accepted that Sarah wouldn't be coming home. He still held on to the hope that one day her body could at least be recovered so that she could receive a proper burial. Sarah was Michael's only child, and more than anything, he wanted for her to have a grave, a place for him to be able to go and speak with Sarah, to tell her that he missed her, or just talk about his day. As the case was making its way through the justice system, Attorney Moriarty appeared in court to request a change of venue. He told the Superior Court Judge, Lisa Thornton, that the public's comments about the case were the most outrageous things that he had seen in his 40 years as an attorney. He submitted 100 comments from various websites as evidence in support of moving the trial. Speaking to the judge, he said, "Every single one presumes his guilt. The people have expressed how they feel in the case. The rage is here. It's in Monmouth County." He requested that the trial be moved to a place where the publicity would be less and suggested Burlington, Middlesex and Mercer counties. Judge Thornton questioned whether the geographical lines in 2017 were blurred due to the more recent technology. Nowadays, newspapers all have their own websites where these articles can be read by anybody across the country and even anybody across the world, not just those in Monmouth County. She questioned, "Let's say we transfer to Mercer County. Do you think the Star-Ledger is going to stop covering the story? How do I know someone from Middlesex didn't comment when the Star-Ledger wrote a story?" Attorney Moriarty responded by saying that those in Monmouth County have a more personal connection to the murder case. Judge Thornton ultimately denied the request to move the trial and stated that Attorney Moriarty did not present sufficient evidence that a change of venue was needed. She said that he could later refile the motion if the jury selection showed the prejudice was so pervasive that it would prevent a fair trial. The anniversary of Sarah's murder rolled around in December of 2017. Michael marked the grim day by heading to the Route 35 bridge. Here, he gazed at Sarah's yearbook photo and later said to the Star-Ledger that only one question constantly crosses his mind. Why? He described how the loss of Sarah made no sense and left his world feeling empty. He said that as each day passed, the feeling of sadness and sorrow seemed to get worse and worse. He said, "There's no coming back for Sarah, no more holidays, no more birthdays, no more memories to share." In the new year, Attorney Moriarty attended a hearing where he sought to have Superior Court Judge Richard English dismiss the murder charge against Liam. During the brief hearing, Attorney Moriarty claimed that when Liam spoke about murdering Sarah in the video recording, he was speaking about a horror film that an acquaintance was making. He further went on to say that Liam was always making things up to try and make himself come across as more interesting. It was a desperate and bold move on Attorney Moriarty's behalf, and the judge refused to dismiss the murder charge. Following the hearing, Attorney Moriarty tried instead to have a number of videotape interviews between Liam and investigators barred from the trial. it was revealed that Liam was interviewed very early on in the case, after it was discovered that he had been spotted with Sarah shortly before she disappeared. Liam spoke with investigators and desperately attempted to plant the seed of doubt in their heads. He said that he had been with Sarah that afternoon, but said that he had no idea where she was, and even offered up several reasons as to why she could be missing. He suggested that Sarah may have travelled to Canada.
Over the past few weeks, she's been just packaging things up in containers and moving them to other people's houses.
Do you think her behavior was odd?
Yeah. I didn't think it at first, but she's always wanting to go to Canada.
He took investigators through the day, claiming that he and Sarah had gone to Taco Bell, then back to her house to eat, before he left for work. He claimed that they had eaten together at her kitchen table before playing video games in her bedroom. In another interview, after CCTV footage placed Liam at the bank with Sarah, investigators asked him why he hadn't mentioned that they had been to the bank in his first interview. Liam said that Sarah needed to deposit some money that she had received from a different home that her family owned in Avon-by-the-Sea. According to Liam, this money had come from her mother, and he suggested that she wanted to lift the money because her father had attempted to take money from her in the past. In a further interview with the investigators, Liam claimed that Sarah had a troubled home life, which could have forced her to flee from her home and start a new life elsewhere.
Over the past few months, she's been telling me, how bad her relationship with her father is and how she just needs to get out of here.
Why was it bad? What made it bad?
Fighting.
Arguing, fighting
constantly.
Okay.
He even suggested that Sarah had talked openly about ending her own life. At one point he said, "I'm one of her closest friends and I don't know why she wouldn't tell me anything before she left." These interviews were played out in court and revealed what investigators claimed were Liam's attempts to thwart their suspicions that he was somehow involved.
Has she been different than normal lately?
Well,
and for how long?
In the past, she has had a tendency to have self-destructive, suicidal behavior. I actually know that.
How long ago?
Years ago.
During the interviews, the investigators had repeatedly told Liam that he wasn't a suspect, because at that point, he wasn't. According to the investigators, Liam's demeanour during the interviews was calm and cooperative. He consented to them searching his mobile phone, which had been found on the driveway by Michael. Ultimately, the judge would deny to dismiss the interviews, and they could be used during trial. Shortly thereafter, attorney Moriarty attempted once again to have Liam's videotaped confession thrown out of trial. During this hearing, the friend who recorded the interview was identified as AC, and it was revealed that he had willingly worked with investigators after he had become suspicious of both Liam and Preston. AC stated that he had wanted to help in the investigation because he feared for his own life. He felt as though if Liam wasn't caught and charged with the murder, then Liam would murder him and or his family. Once again, the motion was denied, and it was concluded that all of the videotaped interviews and the confession from Liam would be presented during trial. After the hearing, Superior Court Judge Richard English said that Liam would be standing trial for Sarah's murder in September, unless he were to accept a plea deal. Liam's newly appointed attorney, Carlos Diaz-Cobo, refused to make a comment after the proceeding. Outside of court, Michael spoke to reporters and said that he and a number of other friends and family members had gathered on the Route 35 bridge on Saturday to mark what would have been Sarah's 21st birthday. They all said a prayer and then released purple balloons, which was Sarah's favourite colour.
Nice day. It's a nice day for Sarah.
From our cousins and our friends and neighbors. Just a lovely, lovely memorial for Sarah's birthday. She's a good kid. I'm feeling happy and sad at the same time. I miss Sarah. but this is a nice tribute to her. She should have been here with us.
Come September, however, the trial was pushed back due to the fact that Liam had a new attorney who needed time to look through all of the files and familiarise himself with the case. On the 23rd of January 2019, the murder trial began. During opening statements, Assistant Monmouth County District Attorney Megan Doyle told jurors that Liam had believed that the amount of money Sarah had come into was more like $100,000. She said, "Sarah Stern will not be walking through these doors into this courtroom at any point. She will never send her father another text. She will never hug him or tell him she loves him. Her friends and family will never get to enjoy her company, her smile, her laugh. It's because this defendant murdered her and set into action a course of events that ensured her body would never be found." During defense attorney Diaz Cobo's opening statements, he said that they would be presenting evidence in the form of a witness who claimed they saw Sarah walking away from her car on the night that it was found on the bridge. Preston was the star witness of the trial. He told the jury that Liam believed that Sarah had found $100,000 hidden away in a shoebox with a note from her deceased mother. According to Preston, Liam had told him that Sarah had found the type of money somebody would kill for.
Learned that she found a shoebox full of money at her house in Avon.
Did you ask any questions about that money when you first learned about it?
I asked how much it was, and I was told that it was in the range of about $100,000.
After first learning about that box of money or that money, $100,000, whatever it was, did that money ever come up on previous or prior or occasions in the future?
It did.
Okay. And how did that happen? What types of conversations did you have about it?
Well, the first we started discussing the fact that it was a lot of money and what we would do if we had that type of money. And then the conversation evolved into, well, what if we did have that type of money, specifically her money? And that was when the idea to rob her came about.
Okay. Now, the first time he told you about Sarah's money, where were you?
We're at our house, okay. Latin Alley Street.
When was the next specific conversation where that money was brought up?
At Clancy's Tavern, where I worked.
Okay.
I was towards the end of a shift. Things were slowing down. Liam came in with another friend, Sean McMahon and Billy McAvoy. And he brought up the money. Passed a comment that it was the type of money that somebody would kill for.
He described how he and Liam started to discuss how that was a lot of money and what they would do with that kind of money. He said that the conversation then escalated to, well, what if we did have that type of money? Specifically, Sarah's money. He said that this was when the plan to rob Sarah was hatched.
They started off as plans to either burglarize her house or to rob her personally. And over time, the conversations progressed to killing her in order to obtain the money.
First of all, the plan was to get Sarah drunk and steal the money. One evening, Liam went over to Sarah's house with Mike's Hard Lemonade, but discovered that Sarah had already deposited the money into her bank. From here, their plan ominously progressed.
Specifically, decided that Liam would strangle her. Any other way, any type of weapon would have been too messy, would have left a whole lot of evidence. And then as far as what to do with her after she was dead, we talked about a couple of plans, burying her down at a campsite that Liam's dad owns, just leaving her at the house, and then ultimately we decided that the best way to go about it would be to make it look like a suicide.
Okay. And were you involved in those conversations?
Yes.
Okay. So you were aware of all that?
Yes.
You were involved in all that?
Yes. At some point while I'm at work, I get this message on Snapchat from Liam saying that he was with Sarah, that they were at the bank, and this is the chance. He asked me when I'd be getting home from work. I said roughly 4 or 5 o'clock. Go back to my dad's house. unload the truck, break everything down, go back to the house at 11 Holly Street. A minute or two later, Liam comes to the door, and he's frantic. He said that he killed Sarah, that he lost his phone, and ultimately told me he needed me to go over to Sarah's house to look for his phone and to move Sarah's body.
According to Preston, Liam needed a way to prompt Sarah to lift the money out of the bank. Since he was her friend, he knew that Sarah often spoke about wanting to move to Canada because there were a lot of media conventions held there. He used this to his advantage and convinced Sarah to take the money out of the bank, count it, and then plan a trip to Canada. On the 2nd of December 2016, Liam's plan materialized. Liam went with Sarah to the bank. Once they returned to Sarah's home, Liam strangled her to death and stole the money, which turned out to be $9,000, not $100,000. Preston went on to detail that they ultimately decided on making Sarah's death look like a suicide. Preston told the jury that after the murder, Liam had made a full and detailed confession to him, and the details were extremely disturbing.
He went into detail about how he killed her, said that he strangled her, that took quite a while for her to actually stop breathing, about a half hour, and in the process she peed herself, she vomited. When she started throwing up, he stuffed a scarf down her throat, and all the while she said his name a couple times.
She said his name? Yes. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Preston next told the jury how after Liam had killed Sarah, he went over to her house to try and look for Liam's phone and hide the body. He described how he found Sarah's body slumped over a toilet in the bathroom and how he dragged her body out of the house and hid it in some bushes in the backyard. Later, he and Liam returned to the house and propped Sarah's body up in the front seat to make it look as though she was sleeping before dumping her into Shark River.
Wait till there's two cars that drive by, and then I get out of the car, I run up. Liam picks her up by the shoulders, I pick her up by the legs, and we throw her off of the bridge.
Okay. So when you get out of your car, is she completely in the car, completely out of the car, or something different?
She's like half hanging out of the car.
Okay. And he grabs her where?
By the shoulders.
You grab their where?
By the feet.
Was that the same way you carried her from the bushes to the fence and then into the car?
It was.
Okay. He had the top, you had the bottom?
Yeah.
Under cross-examination, attorney Diaz-Cobo attempted to poke holes in the statements that Preston had made during court and statements he had made to investigators. He called into question the cooperation agreement that he had struck with prosecutors that would likely reduce his prison sentence. Just days before the deal was reached, Preston had lied to investigators about being sexually assaulted as a child. During cross-examination, attorney Diaz-Cobo highlighted this and said, "You don't always tell the truth," to which Preston replied, "I haven't in the past." Preston acknowledged that he had fabricated the story about being sexually assaulted as a child, but didn't elaborate as to why. Presumably, he had wanted the investigators to feel sympathy for him. Following the cross-examination, one of Sarah's neighbours, Carly Draper, testified that she had seen Sarah and Liam on the day of Sarah's murder. She said that Sarah had told her that she had discovered $20,000 and that she was going to use the money to travel to Canada and live in Liam's apartment. Afterwards, employees of the bank where Sarah lifted the money testified. Raymond Blochies, the bank manager, broke down in tears as he testified.
Sarah was a special kid. Every time she came into the branch, she would come over and give me a hug, a kiss. I've been in my branch for 34 years. A lot of my customers.
Taking my customers a long time.
So I have developed a lot of relationships with people over the years.
And Sarah was one of those people you had a relationship
Absolutely.
With?
Absolutely. I had a customer at my desk when Sarah was leaving the bank, and she waited till she saw me. As I said, every time she came in, she'd come over and give me a hug, sometimes give me a kiss. And she waited till I saw her because I had a customer at my desk.
And how do you know that?
Because she stood in the door looking towards my desk.
And this is another view. Pause.
Right. She's looking towards my desk.
All right. And the person in that video you recognize?
As Sarah.
Play, please.
That's where she's waving to me goodbye.
And that was the last time you saw her?
Correct.
He and Linda Copobianco, who was a bank teller, described how when Sarah came in, she was in an ecstatic mood and was all smiles. While Sarah was in the bank, Liam called Preston and informed him that the plan was going ahead. Megan Barr, one of Sarah's cousins, testified that in the days after Sarah's disappearance, family had gathered at her home. In the front yard, Megan discovered a cell phone. She told the jury that she knew the phone wasn't Sarah's. It was later identified as being Liam's phone. Following her testimony, several of the interviews that Liam had with investigators were played out. In one, Liam had told the investigator that he lost his phone but had purchased a new one. During the trial, the friend who had recorded Liam's confession was identified as Anthony Curry.
He told me he was going to meet up Sarah. She found his money and they were going to count it together. He was going to choke her out. Bring her to the bridge, throw her off. Preston was going to drive the escape vehicle, and they were going to bury the money and leave the keys in the ignition and make it look like she killed herself.
Okay.
Anthony described how when Liam confessed to the murder, he laughed about the fact that there was only $9,000, but said that he didn't feel any different. According to attorney Diaz Cobo, however, the confession to Anthony was complete fabrication. He claimed that Liam had been attempting to impress Anthony. The video recording was played out during court, and a number of Sarah's family and friends wept. Evidence was also presented from a tied expert, who said that it was very likely that Sarah's body was swept out to sea before anybody could have found it. One of the most emotional moments of the trial came when Michael was called to the witness stand. From here, he was asked to identify Liam in the courtroom. "He's right there," Michael said, as he pointed towards Liam. He took the jury through the last conversations he had with Sarah and the moment he discovered that she was missing.
On December 1st, did you have an exchange of text messages with your daughter?
Yes.
What did she say?
Well, with an exclamation point, the castle looks so pretty with the lights and there's a star and a shooting star emoji after that.
Okay. Is that the last time you've ever had contact with your daughter?
Yes.
Now, that is through December 1st.
Yes.
At some point on December 2nd, do you receive a phone call from somebody in New Jersey?
Yeah, I got a call from my mother, who said she hadn't been able to get in touch with Sarah for the whole day.
What time was that text sent to your daughter?
10:35 p.m.
And that's set on December 2nd?
Michael took the jury through his relationship with his daughter. He described how they were always close and often took trips together to conventions. Prosecutor Doyle asked Michael why he had preserved an old iPhone after he got a new one.
Did you turn that phone in when you upgraded it? Why?
It's got all the texts and messages from Sarah.
Could you have saved them?
I don't know. I know people have tried to transfer things and they've lost all their pictures and information, texts and contacts, and I just didn't want to take the chance.
Michael said that he could not get rid of the phone because he wanted to preserve the text messages and voicemails he had from his daughter. According to Michael, he was unaware of the shoebox filled with cash that Sarah had discovered in their home in Avon-by-the-Sea. As the trial was underway, one of the jurors on the case posted a comment on a news article about the case on Facebook. She wrote, "Sitting on the jury, LMAO." After the comment was spotted, the juror was dismissed and defense Diaz Cobo announced that he would be seeking a mistrial. The judge refused the mistrial and ordered that the trial continue. With all of the prosecution's testimony presented, it was now the defense's time to argue their case. Attorney Diaz-Cobo called to the witness stand Craig Hetzel. According to Craig, there was no doubt in his mind that he saw Sarah running into an alley between a movie theater and a cigar shop in Bradley Beach on the morning of the 3rd of December. This was the day after her car was discovered on the bridge. He claimed to the jury that he realized the woman he had seen was Sarah after he saw the missing person flyer at a local 7-Eleven. Under cross-examination, Assistant Monmouth County Prosecutor Christopher Decker asked Craig about when he first spoke to investigators. He had initially claimed that he had seen the woman on the 2nd of December, not the 3rd of December. Craig acknowledged that he had initially gotten confused about the date before later stating, "I'm clear it was Saturday morning." He also admitted that he saw the missing person flyer in December of 2016, but didn't come forward with this information until after the February 2017 arrests of Preston and Liam. Liam had been given the opportunity to testify on his own behalf, but refused, telling the judge that it was his choice to remain silent. During closing arguments, Attorney Diaz-Cobo said that without a body, there is no murder. He went on to say that Liam's recorded confession was nothing more than a made-up story that he intended to pitch as a film. "It was a fantasy. It was an audition," said the attorney, before adding that there was not enough evidence that Sarah was dead. Prosecutor Decker refuted this and said, "Sarah Stern is not in Canada. Sarah Stern did not kill herself. That is ridiculous. Sarah Stern, unfortunately, is not with us anymore." He cited the secretly recorded confession and said that not having a body is not reasonable doubt when you have the two people involved in the murder confessing that they were involved in the murder. Liam's fate was now in the hands of the jury. After a day of deliberation, the jury returned with a verdict. They found Liam McAtasney guilty of the murder of Sarah Stern. Following the verdict, Michael said, "To think that somebody that pretended to be her friend did that to her without any remorse was painful, sad, and beyond anything I've ever experienced before in my life. It was sickening."
Sentencing in the matter of State of New Jersey versus Liam McAtasney. Mr. McAtasney is now 21 years old. He lived in Neptune City. Everyone essentially in all the, almost all of the family members that testified came from this small community of Neptune City. They all knew each other. That's what makes this really, really a heinous event, that these were two people, meaning Sarah and Liam, that knew each other since, I believe, grammar school. So on count one, murder in the first degree, it's life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. Count two is robbery in the first degree. This sentence will run concurrently, meaning at the same time, it's 20 years New Jersey State Prison. And count five, desecrating human remains, is second degree. So that's 10 years consecutive to the other counts, to count one especially.
In June, Liam was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Shortly thereafter, Preston was sentenced to 18 years in prison.
It's been a long 2.5 years for this journey. I think finally we got justice for Sarah. I love my daughter. And everybody else did too. She's a good kid. She was a talented artist. She was a rising star. Her life ended way too soon. I miss her. I cry for her every night. I'm just glad that finally justice is served.
Sarah Stern had her whole life ahead of her. She had massive dreams and ambitions and was in the process of making them materialize. Tragically, however, Sarah became the victim of the ultimate betrayal when she was murdered by two of her closest friends. And what for? A couple thousand dollars. On what would have been Sarah's 22nd birthday, Michael Stern commemorated her life and poignantly said, "We just want to remember Sarah. what a good person she was, what a great artist she was. Her art will live on forever. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to say a big, massive thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Vicky London and Sandra Benfield. I am eternally grateful for the support on Patreon and Himalaya Plus, and it truly helps this one-woman podcast grow. If you'd like to support the show in return for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, early release episodes, ad-free episodes, my undying love, and other goodies, then please check out Morbidology on Patreon or Himalaya Plus. Can I also ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider leaving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. It's a great way for new people to find me. Big thanks to everybody who simply listened to an episode, commented on an episode, shared an episode, sent me an email, messaged me on social media. I really, really appreciate all of the support. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And make sure you stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Murder and More. Until next time, take care of yourself, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Hi guys, Kira from Murder and More here. I am the solo host of the UK-based true crime podcast, where each Sunday I tell you about a murder, disappearance, or serial killer. Murder and More is available to listen to wherever you get your podcasts, including platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castbox, and Stitcher. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder and More, Instagram at Murder and More Pod, and on Facebook at Murder and More Podcast. Head over to murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com to find out more.